All right, we will begin with our roll call. Todd Struble.
Hi, present.
Annalise.
Present.
And Alan.
Good morning, Dr. Holt and everyone. Present by video, Alan Lazo.
Wonderful. And I understand that Susan will not be joining us today. And so we're going to move right then to our approval of the meeting minutes from our last Bond Oversight Committee meeting. Are there any questions from the committee, Bond Oversight Committee members? Okay, someone would move to approve.
I move to approve the minutes from our October meeting.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, Al.
I'll second that.
Thanks. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes as recorded for the October 6th meeting. All in favor, I will just call on you like we normally do. The sign aye or yes. Beginning with you, Annalise.
Aye.
Thank you. Alan?
Aye.
Thank you. Todd?
I'll abstain since I was not present and have, yeah.
Okay. Well, the out of the numbers that are present, the meeting minutes will be approved as recorded. There is an opportunity for public testimony. And we do not have anyone signed up that I'm aware of, but provided there's someone on the Zoom meeting who would like to share, you would have 2 minutes to address items. We would ask that you address the items that are specifically related to today's meeting. But if there's something beyond today's meeting that's pertaining to the work that the Bond Oversight Committee is engaged in, you are more than welcome to do that. Also, understand that the response and the engagement will come from the Portland Housing Bureau itself. So do we have anyone signed up for public testimony? I don't see anyone. And if there's anyone on the Zoom that wanted to say anything, you can indicate by the raising of your hand. I don't see any of that. So then we will move to today's first item. We have some project milestones. Jill Chin will give us the review, and then we have quarterly expenditure, and I believe Angel will do that. And so we will go in that order, project milestones. Jill.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Do I need to turn anything on?
No, that's only if they can't hear you, then you can use that, but
okay.
You're usually fine.
Great, thank you. For the record, I'm Jill Chen. I'm the Housing Investments and Portfolio Preservation Manager. And as you can see from the slide, I just wanna say thank you all. We have some really great news. You'll see from the slide on the dashboard, there's been a flip from those projects or the number of units that are in construction to those number of units that are complete or in lease-up. So the dark blue line shows the number of people housed that are completed. I mean, we're up to now, we're almost at 2,000 people housed, and that's a great news for everyone. We also have a number of projects still in construction. We'll talk about that in a minute. And a few projects in pre-development. Since our last Bond Oversight Committee meeting, a few key events happened. The first is that the Oregon Housing Community Services approved private activity bonds for all fully funded PHP projects. And that includes Alder 9 and Francis Clare, both of which are PHP bond projects. Alder 9 closed January 19th, just a couple of weeks ago. And part of that was because PHP increased the funding of the bonds by 1.6 million, and we used another 3.113 million in Central East Side TIF to fill in the gaps. That was a very significant project, I believe 159 units, and it's already in construction. Francis and Claire, a project that is 100% permanent supportive housing. We also had a small gap, and PHB increased the total bonds by about 700,000. And that project is going to be in closing at the end of June. Next slide, please. Wanted to just touch base with the Bond Oversight Committee to talk a little bit about the risk and issues we're seeing in our production pipeline. As mentioned, we talked about private activity bonds previously. Private activity bonds continue to be a scarcity and will be competitive going forward. Oregon Housing and Community Services has indicated that they will continue the split of 65% for the metro region and 35% for the rural. This does, and they will have a priority with local funding sources. That does become an issue for PHB because, as you all know, we have no more Portland housing bonds to allocate to support our projects. And PHB's sort of declining funding availability will continue to be an issue. So it will be hard for us to push the Portland projects forward if we cannot indicate continued support in those projects we want to move forward, because a critical component is that private activity bonds, and OHCS is asking for local funds in all of them. So that's something to keep in mind. Next is interest rates continue to be a huge risk. We just heard a project that came in with $800,000 in additional interest during construction costs. So, you know, that's a continuing risk until these projects close. Delays in construction and inspections, we actually heard a lot from PGE and PPL, the fact that they're not dedicating staff to inspecting projects on a timely basis. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation with a HUD representative for the state of Oregon, and he had been hearing the same thing. So we're trying to figure out how, you can call it, that kind of process can be expedited. Some other risks, the next two, multiple PSH causing stress, as well as projected operating costs. These are sort of affiliated issues, which is cost of maintaining the buildings and also fire life safety, and all of this is coming together in that, you can call it, building stability, building operations issues. And the last is the we see the continued need for an alignment of state, regional, and local resources. As you've seen before, we had to go through multiple, you could call it, iterations of competitiveness, where they come in, compete for PHB resources, then compete for, you know, state, maybe Lyft, maybe some other source, then come in again for private activity bonds. It's just multiple iterations. Yes, Alan?
Thanks, Jill. I just wanted to go back to a couple of points you made on here and make sure I'm understanding them correctly. One, on the fourth bullet down, the multiple PSA, is that permanently supportive? So is the issue around permanently supportive housing developments?
We have heard issues around the PSH units that the folks coming in from coordinated access are more needy.
Okay.
And the downside is that also the service providers are being stressed, and they're not having enough, you can call it, delivery of services. And they themselves, the service providers, are having difficulty meeting or getting staffing. And it's partly inflationary, partly the population.
Yeah. And I think also the marketplace, right? I think there's a lot of work being done in PSH right now, and just all the way across the Tri-County area, frankly. So, okay. And then the other one on the top one, so it's two parts. So are there any projects that are bond funded that have gaps? It sounded like all the gaps were closed, and particularly the private activity bond gaps were closed. So are there any that are at risk under that first bullet that are bond funded?
Yes, there is one project I forgot to mention earlier. I was going to mention it later.
Oh, sorry.
There is one project, Barber Apartments. The good news is in 2023, I'm going to go way into the details and you tell me if I'm going way too deep. Barber Apartments, it came in and we had a $9 million gap last year.
Okay.
That gap has been reduced now because they got a LIHTC basis boost because it's a difficultly developed area due to IRS census tracts things.
Okay.
So it's now reduced to more manageable, I think about $5.5 million now. That's still a large gap. So we haven't fully funded that project yet.
Okay.
It is targeted to close in 2024, and we're working with IHI, the developer, to fill that gap. So that's the only one out of the Portland bonds that have not gotten private activity bonds. But we feel like when it is ready to apply for private activity bonds,
okay,
we should be able to get it through. Yeah. Because the private activity bonds open every 6 months.
Okay.
So all the ones that we were able to get closed
in that first round,
2023, we pushed them in.
Okay.
So you'll see that we've got a ton of closings the first half of 2023. I think it's right now 8 or 9 closings. And that's normally what PHP has done for a full year in the past. So we're just cranking it out, Alan.
Nice. Great. Thank you so much, Jill. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, next slide, please. As mentioned, the good news is we're almost done. Almost done, Alan. And we are exceeding the total targets by 43%. As mentioned, the risk is Barber Apartments, which is number 2 over here in that orange. The other one that is green, sort of orange, is number 7, which is Francis and Claire. That is targeted to close end of June. And right now we see no issues on that project. It will get closed. We do see some potential delays in opening with construction and inspection risk that we mentioned earlier, but they're not issues in terms of not being able to complete, it's just slippage of the openings. So in terms of the metrics, you'll see on the left side, the total achievements made by the bond. And wanted to thank all of you for allowing us to move forward. Next slide, please. So in terms of the 2022 bond openings, we had a number, Crescent Court, Cathedral Village, The Starlight, Hayu to Lixom, and Las Adelitas. I think Starlight and Hayu to Lixom had their recent grand openings. Las Adelitas is coming up. And you'll see that it was over 500 units of affordable housing, 1,200 plus people housed. Next slide, please. In terms of looking forward for 2023 openings, there's the Emmons Place, Aurora, Anna Mann, and the Joyce. This is also great news in that all of them are targeted to open the first half of 2023. So you guys will be very, very busy with both closings and openings. Emmons Place, the South, is going to close. I think they're supposed to be opening this month, in just a few weeks, if not already. Aurora, sometime end March, early April. Anna Mann, the South building, also supposed to open sometime this month. And the Joyce in April. So a lot of openings first half of this calendar year. And any questions? If not, I hand over the next slides to Angel.
Well, what I want to do is just go through and call out the committee and give them a chance to interact at all. So Todd.
Nothing, no questions, just appreciations. I know I've taken a step away from this work for a little while. For family reasons, but I drive by Hayu to Lixom and Las Adelitas pretty regularly, so it was really gratifying to kind of see those projects come together. Yeah. So just, yeah, real appreciations for the team to keep this work going. And I'm looking forward. I'm really appreciative for the updates. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Annalise.
Yeah, thank you so much. No, just ditto to everything that Todd said. This is really exciting. It's exciting to see so much progress happening and looking forward, more progress to come. And I have no questions. Thank you so much.
Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Holden. And I'm the same. I just want to echo, appreciation for the Bureau and for the members of this community that have moved these projects forward. It's amazing to see this work and to see it on the ground. So thank you all so much.
It's pretty exciting to think about 43% above anticipated. That's incredible. Yeah. So, Angel, we go to you.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. So the expenditure reports highlights are the following. Well, before that, let me introduce myself for the record. So my name is Angel Landron Gonzalez. I'm the finance and accounting manager, and my pronouns are he, him. So regarding the expenditure report highlights, the expended versus committed amounts have continued increasing on ongoing constructions compared with the previous quarter's report. The expenditures as of December 31st of 2022 are $156.8 million, where the project spending has increased by $6.7 million, equivalent to an increase of 4.5%. The committed funding as of this period is $103.8 million, which has decreased by $4.3 million, equivalent to a reduction of 4% compared to last quarter. The remaining amount of $457,318 will be allocated to fill funding gaps at the awarded projects. Any questions?
We'll go through each of the bond oversight committee members. And I'll begin with you, Annalise. Any questions, comments?
No questions, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
My question is actually on page 2 of the expenditure report and the bond commitments. Alder 9 has the project amounts of $27.2 million, but none expended to date, but we show them on our progress report as in construction. And so I'm wondering kind of how those numbers play out.
I'll answer that. Alan, that's because Alder 9 closed in January 19th. So there's no expenditure as of December.
December. Oh, okay. Got it.
Thanks. Great question. Any other question now? No. Todd?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. We will move on. Thanks, Angel, for the report. Our next on the agenda is the housing bond audit update. And Gina, I believe you are leading us through it.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. My name is Gina Scott, she, her pronouns. I am the risk analysis and compliance manager. And the 2020-2021 bond audit came out 1 week after the last meeting. So I just wanted to take one slide, just a few minutes to highlight kind of the successes that we had at the Bureau regarding the bonds. So all of the recommendations from the prior year audit were implemented. This year, they looked at 37 disbursements and all of them were in order. There were no findings. And pretty much what they found was that they had 4 recommendations for us to kind of document our processes to show that we have consistency across the board. And one of the biggest things that recommendation that we have adopted is changing our disbursement request process. Our finance team has worked really hard to kind of make it more secure so that, you know, those bond funds are not at risk. So any questions about that? Again, I just wanted to kind of highlight that it was a great audit. We had no findings, and really the all the bond work was really great. So,
thanks, Gina. I will take us through our process and just go committee member by committee member. Todd, comments, questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalise.
No questions, but just this is wonderful news. It's always great when something like this comes back so positive. So congratulations to all of you and wonderful news.
And then Alan.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Holt. And thanks. No questions. And I agree with Annalise. Great to see the audit come back clean like that. Thanks.
Well, thank you for the report, Gina. Appreciate that. Appreciate your work. We will keep moving through our agenda. Project team presentations. Hacienda CDC, you have 20 minutes. If you would plan on your speaking portion being about 15 minutes or so, and then leaving about five, four questions, that would be great. And I'm going to set a timer. And my timer will, in essence, be for 13 of the 15 minutes. And then when we get close, I will indicate that you have a couple of minutes left. So, to your hands.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I really appreciate it. It's really nice to see many familiar faces in this room. As usual, Gina is one of our alums, as well as others, you know, at PHP. So thank you for supporting this project, everyone. I'm just going to say a couple of words. You know, my team is going to be presenting and showcasing the progress that we have made on this project over the past 3 years, 2 years and a half, something like that. All I have to say is that I am very grateful for the support that the city, as well as many other stakeholders across the state, have placed in us, Hacienda CDC, and specifically, you know, for Las Adelitas. It's been a long way coming. This is not a traditional project, used to be a strip club, you know, for years and years. A lot of things happen in Northeast Portland. So it was a really special project for us to make happen. I am happy that this is, you know, already becoming, well, it is a reality, but it's becoming fully leased up, you know, as we speak. Hopefully in the next few months, we will be completely full. And this will really close the circle of joy that we started, you know, when I arrived in 16, 17. With that said, I'm going to pass this to our Director of Real Estate Development, Marianne Bolori, and I'm going to get off camera. And I am really, really happy about the work that my team is going to be showcasing right now. And I hope that all of you on March 9th, come and join us for the official grand opening of Las Adelitas, formerly known as the Sugar Shack. Thank you very much, everyone. Marianne, it's all yours.
Thank you, Ernesto. Good morning. Thank you so much for having us in here today. For the sake of time, I'm just going to pass the presentation to Kevin Chavez, who has been managing this project, and to Jacqueline, who's also our Chief Operating Officer in Hacienda and is in charge of all of our services. So if you could have the next slide up, and Kevin, it's in your ball.
Great, thank you. And thanks again for having us today. We're excited to share some of the exciting milestones and construction updates for the project. So yes, today we'll be sharing some construction updates. We'll also be speaking about the marketing and lease up strategies and the outcomes of those. And we'll also talk a little bit about the DMWESB participation percentages throughout construction and throughout the project. And finally, end on some material changes. And these are really more of a lessons learned. But without further ado, yes, our project team, as you well know, Hacienda CDC is the developer and service provider. Also not listed, but a service program provider that we're excited to have is Cascadia Behavioral Health in Familias in Action. Cascade Management is a project manager. Salazar Architect is the architect of record, and LMC Construction is a general contractor. Our project schedule or milestones, we actually received TCO on, or temporary certificate of occupancy, when individuals could start moving in on December 16th. And that afternoon, we actually received our first family to move in. So effectively, we received TCO and Lisa began on the same morning, and we were excited to begin housing families. So February 17th, the project is scheduled for project completion or certificate of occupancy. And LMC will be vacating the site shortly later this month. So on March 9th, as Ernesto had mentioned, we have our grand opening. Very excited for the community, and of course, hope you all can attend. In July 31st, we're expected to be 95% leased up or moved in. In our current stage of development, as I've noted, is we're really just wrapping up construction right now and back punching with our move-ins at 21%. So the building is 21% loaded or occupied. And a milestone, thanks for moving the slide forward, but a milestone I just wanted to note, conversion is targeted for October later this year. So a little bit about our unit mix. Our project provides 142 new affordable housing units to the community, one of which is a property manager's unit, but 99 or 70% of our total units are family-sized units. 18 or 13% of those total units are permanent supportive housing units. So you can see that our target population really is directed at families and those households who are experiencing homelessness. Some on-site amenities include our beautiful and safe open spaces. So we have a plaza, we also have a courtyard, on-site amenities such as laundry rooms, a community room, Portland Niños program, and of course, community event spaces and kitchens, which are open to the residents and the community at large. Also to note, we are actually really excited that we have 4 electric vehicle charging stations at Las Sagrarias, and 3 electric vehicles will actually be provided for families to be able to use. And then lastly, I just wanted to touch on the design features. Largely, you know, what this project was striving for and designed around was sustainability and access. And so for our sustainability, we are seeking Earth Advantage certification, and we're actually on track to receive platinum certification. So that's it's a very exciting and actually very personal to me. I'm excited that we're going to be able to hit those high marks. Of course, ADA and rooftop solar. And one of the great advantages of this rooftop solar is it's going to be able to cover the residents' electric utilities, not just common spaces, which is traditionally or typically done. And I think it's one of the the few projects that is doing this and trying to give back, you know, the sustainability incentive to the community members and the residents. And really, this is just getting back to the triple bottom line, which we all seek, right? Social equity, finance. Sorry, I didn't catch that. Okay, I'll move on. So social equity, sustainability, and the finance aspect of it. And moving on, I will let Jacqueline take on the marketing, leasing, and strategies and outcomes.
Yeah, you bet. Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Jacqueline Sarna. I'm our chief operating officer, but was our director of youth and family services, and have had the pleasure of seeing this project come to fruition from those very early days of the Sugar Shack, and filled with so much pride that we're here and our team has taken us over the finish line. So great to be here this morning. So our outreach strategies for increasing access are really just aligned with our organizational values, right? We provided bilingual marketing materials in Spanish and Somali, which are our primary languages here in Cali and in our housing. We hosted an application release event, marketed multiple languages, which was really awesome. We had hundreds and hundreds of people line up to get technical assistance and support for filling out their application, learning more about the process, meeting directly with Cascade Management, and sort of demystifying that very complicated process that can be lease up. We worked with our staff, obviously, who are bilingual, but we also brought in our friends at Yerko Language Bank to provide language supports. And then here are some of our outcomes. So our initial tenant demographics are thus, we've received 450 plus applications. 16 of 18 referrals are in progress for our PSH units. Kevin mentioned that we're really lucky to have our partners at Cascadia Health and Familias en Acción carrying most of that work with Cascade Management. And we have 30 move-ins from 12/16, so we're 21% leased. So some of our families got to spend their very first Christmases at Las Adelitas, which is really exciting. Kevin.
Thank you. Unmuting myself there. So yes, DMWESB contracts or diversity percentage, participation percentages for our projects. Very excited to say that we've really hit some high marks with the project outcomes. You can see our hard cost contracts are 40%. Our professional services or soft costs are around 68%. And the general contractor on the project was LMC Construction, with the professional consultant being, again, the architect of record, Salazar Architects. And just another quick little figure, we're 98% complete. So we're barely there, and we're almost there. And yeah, looking forward to having the completion later this month. We can move on to the next slide. Thank you. So the workforce diversity, a little bit different percentages to show. So really what we're showing here is the apprentice hours in the project outcomes. So for people of color, we have 47% in apprentice hours and 19% for women. And for journey level hours, we have, for people of color, 71% and 2% for women. And I think one of the really interesting statistics here is that, you know, traditionally the workforce diversity is not really where we want it to be, but we can see with the current apprentice hours that the workforce with women is high and is getting higher and is really looking to change the trend or shift the trend in the journey level hours that we're going to be seeing in the future. And I'll pass it over to Jacqueline to share some of the community engagement updates.
Thanks so much, Kevin. So we had lots of partners in the community engagement process throughout the last several years. We worked really closely with our engagement partners at Verde, Living Coli, Coli Association of Neighbors, and our friends at SUMA. I'd also like to note that Salazar Architecture was a really big part in our engagement. They really do a wonderful job at engaging community around some of the architectural elements. So early on, we had site design charrettes with Coli Association of Neighbors. We hosted community focus groups in English and Spanish, discussing size, layout, amenities, et cetera. I should also note that we had several community focus groups specifically just with youth, which were really exciting to see what our youth wanted on site and incorporate their voice into this project. We also hosted early on a pre-lease up, sort of when the information line was going to be opened, a community info session in English and Spanish discussing the leasing process. So we focused one of those info sessions on community partners. We invited neighborhood schools, churches, community agencies, and neighborhood associations to come and learn about the process so then they could be good stewards of the process to folks that they were connecting with and help us sort of navigate. And then we also had community-based sessions. All of those included a presentation from Cascade Management and ample time for Q&A when folks could dive a little bit deeper into pieces of the process or maybe even particular personal situations that they had questions about throughout the lease-up process. Obviously, again, our participant demographics were mostly BIPOC members of our community, folks who are low income, older adults, folks with limited English proficiency, houseless folks, lots of existing tenants, et cetera. This is a really high profile project in our community because community has been sort of with us from the start in purchasing the Sugar Shack and we're so deeply engaged in the interim when we were hosting community meetings in the building. There was so much ownership around Las Adelitas, and we really wanted to make community engagement rich and felt very a deep sense that we needed to have community with us from the beginning here. So some of the outcomes that you'll see are changes in final unit mix, in-unit amenities, courtyard design, open community space, and our bilingual resident services coordinator. That's something that we include with all of our properties. But one specific example of an outcome of community engagement was that in the original design, most of the kitchen cabinets were white, so very like modern and sleek. And a couple of the parents in our group were like, oh my gosh, that's going to be a nightmare for fingerprints and you're going to see everything and I'm going to be constantly cleaning. Can we make those cabinets a little bit darker? And as you'll see, they are indeed. So just a good example of why engaging community is so important.
And I won't spend too much time on this slide, but we really just wanted to remind the project funding sources. You all have probably seen this slide before in our last presentation. But again, the total project costs are just over $58 million, with roughly $15 million of those dollars is provided by the Portland Housing Bond. And really, this slide, we really just want to underscore that we were on budget. And the next slide will show that not only were we on budget, we were on track, and we hit the 50% test mark, and we're at the finish line, essentially. So we'll move over to the next slide and share some of the more interesting pieces of information from the project. So the project has been awarded. Let me actually say this acronym. It's ARLA, but it's the Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance Program for 10 PSH units. And some additional changes really were the market conditions. So we've seen interest rate hikes, volatility with lumber and, of course, material cost escalations and supplies. We've also, I think almost everyone across the industry has experienced labor shortages and disruptions in the chain supply. And so while all this was happening, even though our TCO and CO had moved or shifted for the project, our move-in date did not, and that's why we were so excited that we got TCO the morning that we had actually planned for move-ins to happen. It was really a huge effort between the entire team, the entire development team, to make that happen. So yes, again, last thing I wanted to say is thank you all for the time, and we're excited to have been able to present this project to you.
Thank you very much. What a presentation. What a journey, what a process. Annalise, comments or questions?
Jacqueline, Kevin, thank you. Ernesto, thank you so much for being here today. It's so wonderful to have these project updates and to really see them really come to life, and congratulations. It sounds like you're basically almost across the full finish line, which is very exciting. I know it's been a couple years in the making, and I've driven past it a few times, and it's been wonderful to see it and it kind of begin to be built. Also, just wanted to say really excited about the number of family sized units that are in that building. It's very substantial, and that is very exciting. And I just want to be like, I'm excited. So congratulations
again.
Thank you, Annalise.
Thank you, Annalise.
Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. And oh my gosh, where do we even begin? Let me begin with a statement like Annalise's, and then I'll have a question at the end. To me, this is not just a remarkable outcome, but such a remarkable story. I live about a mile and a half from Los Adelitas, and have lived here for 18 years, I know the full story. I know the history and the Sugar Shack and the community sourced funding that went to kind of start the process of acquiring the Sugar Shack, and it's just an amazing, amazing outcome. It is such a great example of the kind of outcomes we can see with so much intentionality. And that to me is so important. The other aspect of this for me is, and the work we do is watching what is happening in Cully and the work that's being done to support and preserve and keep in place the very diverse community members we have in Cully, and to see whether or not that can work. And the work that Hacienda, folks like NEA are doing for those communities is just incredible to watch. So Ernesto and Kevin and Jacqueline, congratulations and thank you all for the work that you are doing there. It's absolutely amazing. And I love driving through the area and seeing the work that's being done right in that community. So
thank you, Alan. And I'm sure you remember some of our discussions in our EDCO groups, frustration and, just when are we going to be able to do this, right? And with analysts, when we're sitting in those technical committees and stakeholder committees with Metro, the same thing. And Gina and Jacqueline have seen the history of this project, from just being a nuance to no, it's not possible, to let's do a McDonald's, Dollar Tree, you name it. Everybody said that we couldn't do it. But here we are. And this is an effort that has been supported by the entire community. And obviously, the Portland Housing Bureau has played a very significant role in funding this, along with the state, of course. But it is thanks to all of you and the state that we are in this place today. So I am super grateful. And Alan, you better show up on March 9th. So, the same with you, Annalise. We want to see you here, and you, Gina, and everybody else at PHB.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ernesto, and thank you to your team. This is absolutely an amazing moment.
All right. Thank you, Alan.
Alan, did you have a question?
I'm going to forego my question. Thank you.
Okay. Doctor. All right. Todd.
Hi. Yeah. The story is amazing. I want to say I first heard about the Sugar Shack about 10 years ago when my wife was working with Verde on some community engagement for the Not in Cully project plan. That site was identified through just such strong community engagement from Verde and other community partners in Cully, and to see a public funding come through and to support that vision is just like an incredible story. So my hat's off to everyone involved with seeing this come to life. I'll look forward to being at the opening as well. I do have a question though, and I have a difficult question that I think I'm as part of the oversight committee, we kind of have to ask some of these questions. But while I was sort of stepped back from the role, I did see in the news that property management at affordable housing complexes has been a challenge. And I don't want to suggest that's the place for even like the majority of most affordable housing developments. But I did want to ask for like long-term accountability. I think with property management, lease-up is exciting for new tenants. Tenants are happy to be there. But then after a while, the sheen wears off and, paint needs to be done, maintenance needs to happen. So what, I guess my question is, what layers of accountability for property management are there to ensure that, you know, the tenants at these develop, at your development will, you know, continue to have a healthy and safe, affordable housing for them and their families? Thank you.
Let me take a quick, 10,000 foot level, answer to that question, Todd. You know, the problem is a little more complex than just accountability with the property manager or companies. This is a penny making business. So when you are, when you have low income housing tax credits, they're really restricted in terms of cash flow and how much you can release for property management. These companies are tied down to, pay lower wages, and maintenance is always a struggle. There is a lot of, a lot of repairs that come, over time, and we have to take, those repairs out of our, reserves for replacement and so on and so forth. Sometimes we have to subsidize, those repairs depending on the size with our cash flow. But the reality is that the restrictions that both the state as well as many bonds, in this case, the city of Portland or many other entities are financing projects, they have limits as to how much we can spend on property management and resident services. So it is a complicated and delicate balance, for us to provide, everything that we can. In fact, most organizations end up subsidizing some of those resident services as well as PM through their gains of developer fees or any other grants. I was just talking to some of our partners and they said, we apply mostly for resident services, resident services overspending that we incur, over the years, for our companies. So it is a systemic issue, something that we have to continue to try to balance. But right now, and as we speak, we haven't figured out across the industry how to really do an excellent job without really dipping into the economics of the project altogether. I don't know, do you guys want to add more to it?
Yeah, so let me add something from the operations point of view for Los Adelitas. We have a full-time resident services that is located on site. So they have an office, they would be there all the time to actually complement if the property management has staffing issues or whatever. So we have implemented that for Los Adelitas. And even during the lease up, that person is there. We've already hired the resident services. She started 2 months before we actually started the lease up, so she would be trained. And that person would be there to work with the tenants. And if there are any issues, to try to resolve it and bring it to our attention internally so we can jump on that. And I've also incorporated a whole weekly meeting with our property management company so we can stay on top of the things and get to them before the residents start complaining about issues. So we also can handle those internally if the property management people do not have the staffing to handle those. So those are some of the things we have implemented on the Los Adelitas, and we're hoping to implement actually these on the other properties also.
And if I can say something without piling on too much of with what Miriam just said, I think Hacienda is in a unique position that we are the developer and also the primary service provider, that we're, that much closer in shoulder length to witnessing some of the issues that may arise and being able to respond to them.
Thank you very much for weighing in. We appreciate the report. Any other comments or questions from the, Alan, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I just wanted to kind of add into this conversation, I know that we don't want a longer conversation about this, and Todd, it may be something to talk about in the future, but I think one of the differences here I'm wondering about as this moves forward for us to watch is, just as Kevin talked about, right, the property management piece here, is, to me, seems like it's a slightly different perspective than we might have seen in the marketplace before. We have an organization like Hacienda that's doing that work, and particularly from a culturally responsive framework. And so, with that, again, with that intentionality, might we see different and better outcomes than we might have seen in the marketplace overall? And I think if there's Anybody that can do it, I think it's Ernesto and his team, although I think he's moved on to mass timber now also, so I'm not sure where his focus is.
No, two different operations, Alan. Two different companies, actually, you know. So the mass timber, mass production housing is a total different team unrelated to real estate development services within Hacienda CDC. And I want to make sure that everybody gets that point across, because, you know, our capacity has been questioned in the past, and it is a misinformed assessment, I believe, simply because, you know, our largest team is the real estate development team doing affordable housing, low-income housing tax rate projects. The mass timber initiative, it's going to have its own board right now, has its own staff, is going to be completely different. So there it is.
Well, thank you everyone for your report and your work. Todd, thank you for the question. It is definitely something to keep the pulse on, keep the finger on the pulse. I'm so excited to see how you Hacienda brings this to pass. When I think of that area, I think beyond and even before the Sugar Shack, I think of the old hamburger place that was there. We used to go and get burgers back in the day, way, way back in the day. And I was a little guy, had some of the best hamburgers at that particular location, but excited about what this is today and what moves forward. So thank you for your report. And now we will move on in our agenda to our interim director's update with Molly Rogers. Molly.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I just wanted to applaud and thank the Hacienda team for this incredible project. I just got so inspired listening to the presentation and thinking about all the families that are going to have generational effect in having a stable, permanent home in such a vibrant community. I can't help but just want to take a moment to talk about, I remember at the days when it was truly community organizing in action that had to crowdsource and find the funds to just secure the site. So it started with having Hacienda and other community partners there, seeing an opportunity, figuring out, taking a risk, huge risk. It was before the bonds were even passed. So it paid off. But seeing now the multiplier effect, that early organizing of community, and seeing now the tangible results of how many homes. And not only that, but I think it helped create that momentum for now a new Coley TIF district. So just wanted to acknowledge that this was an example of something that can be transformative for the Coley neighborhood that then spurred the desire of community to say, hey, we can do this again. And we believe we can use TIF in a different way than it was historically done, because look at what Los Adelitas can represent for all of us. So that's one quick update that was passed that should generate, they're estimating $140 million for affordable housing investments in the Coley neighborhood. We hope to see more Las Adelitas in the future. Couple other updates for you all. Oh, my apologies for those of you who don't know me. I'm Molly Rogers, she, her pronouns, interim director. I just couldn't help but want to respond to Las Adelitas first. But I did want to share with you all a few updates with the city. As many of you know, we are embarking on a two-year charter reform, transforming our local form of government process, which is incredibly exciting, but also has led to an incredible amount of questions and wonderment from many, from all of us involved, of how are we going to get through this in 2 years. So just wanted to acknowledge that there is a lot of uncertainty of how this will play out over 2 years, but we do know this is starting with a really positive clustering of service areas that is that's pairing Portland Housing Bureau with Prosper Portland, Bureau of Development Services, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability into one portfolio under Commissioner Rubio, and we're already seeing the results of that. Today at City Council, you'll hear the council grapple with a 90-day work plan that combines some early work of charter reform and also some huge policy lifts that responds to the crises that we face today related to economic recovery, housing and homelessness, and public safety. So I encourage you all to listen in on that. There's a couple key areas for the Housing Bureau as part of that 90-day work plan. First and foremost, the mayor has identified a goal of 400 parcels that they want to have identified to be future affordable housing developments. So we are working with consultants and staff to try to help identify what opportunities exist in the city already. And also looking at where do we find other opportunities to leverage our resources with other partners. A, we've got some gaps in our current pipeline that we've done. Jill Chen and her team has done an exceptional job working with Metro, working with the state, working with HUD, and working with various partners, and working with all of you, all of our bond developers, of having to frankly re-underwrite and redo all the numbers multiple times in this very dynamic mode that we are in terms of increasing construction costs and interest rates escalation. So that's just expressing my appreciation for all of you who had to redo these projects multiple times, and express appreciation to the PhD staff that has had to help along the way and understand what resources we have and we have been able to garner from our partners. So it's very good news that just wanted to announce to you all that since the beginning of the pandemic, we started out with a $70 million additional gap in our projects that we've been able to redirect and leverage other funds. Now we've gone down from 70 million to 15 million. So 55 million has been identified in this time period. So huge kudos to all of you on that. And then last but not least, the governor's budget has been released, and that's $1 billion investing in affordable housing and homelessness. And we hope to the extent that we can be a partner with the state and help potentially leverage our resources to really meet the dire needs of people who are housing instable and who are people who are needing secure housing and living in unstable situations. So there's a lot happening at the same time, which leads us to, I know, a lot of conversations trying to understand what is the best course of action for a potential continuation of a bond, some kind of bond, Portland bond, Metro bond. I think that's just something that the, you know, all the various elected officials involved in the two bonds are going to need to come together. I know there's some early conversations happening, and I believe Welcome Home is looking at doing a poll. So a lot of talk there, and we are very much interested in serving our part and continuing working on any analysis done, because I think the Portland bond has shown to be an incredible success story, and it's really transformed really every neighborhood in Portland, or every cluster, and every as much as we can, sort of where we've created diversified housing streams that didn't exist before the bonds. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions from the bond oversight committee members.
Thanks, Molly, for the report. Wow, $1 billion from the governor. What an investment. What an opportunity. Alan, I'll begin with you.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I don't have any questions, but also appreciate the investment that's being made by the state in affordable housing and in the production of housing. So looking forward to the next several years.
Yeah. Todd?
Just echo what Alan said. No other questions. Thanks.
And then Annalise.
Yeah, thank you. Echoing what everyone said, I don't have any questions, but just thank you, Molly, for the update and for all of the good news and just keeping us abreast of the multiple jurisdictional pieces and how they are all moving. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, what a moment. So many moving elements and aspects, especially as moving into a different kind of city government that we can anticipate. And who knows what that's going to look like and how that's going to work. And so, Molly, however we can support you as you navigate these waters and go through the crazies of it all. Not that I'm calling in crazy. I'm just acknowledging that there's going to be the levels it's going to be. So for everybody who was at the meeting, thank you so much. Thanks, Bond Oversight Committee, for your work and continued effort. Our next meeting is scheduled for April 6th. My question is, are we going to be hybrid? Are we going to be in person? I know that we have periodically done an evening meeting. Is the April meeting prepared for that?
TBD, whatever the board, I mean, whatever the oversight committee wants, we're here.
Can we take a quick straw poll with the members?
Absolutely. Annalise, I saw that you unmuted.
Yeah, I would say, as I think you know, my day job is being one of Metro State Government Affairs folks. And so I am down in Salem these days, and so would appreciate if it is during the day that it is virtual. If it is in the evening, I might be able to make it in person. Although as of now, I have committees that meet 5 to 6:30 Monday through Thursday. So just wanting to acknowledge that for the next, I think it's now five months, my schedule is a little bit challenging.
Thank you, Annalise. Todd or Alan, any comment or thought? Alan.
I think if by reference to an evening meeting, I think if what we're talking about is our opportunity to return to have a community meeting sometime, I think it would be great. Like the rest of the world, I have no idea how to figure out whether the timing is right, but I would love to see us do that in community meeting. And one thing I'd like to add, if I could, Dr. Hull, because I wasn't sure if we would have any last comments, but I just want to also note for folks that it is so amazing for us to celebrate the successes that we have here. But I also do want to recognize that every community across the state, and including Portland, is deeply impacted by housing crisis in many, many different ways. And the solutions are multiple and complex, and the work that we do here is just one part of that. And really want to recognize for folks that might be, you know, participating or watching this meeting that we know that there is other work and much more work that needs to be done beyond just producing and creating these affordable units. But it's a big part of the solution and an important part. But we recognize there's lots of other work that needs to be done to solve the crisis that we have in front of us. So
thanks, Alan. Well stated. Thank you, Todd.
Yeah, I guess, again, just echoing what Alan said, appreciations for Alan being so articulate and just naming the success of this project, but also acknowledging the challenges that, you know, our communities are experiencing. I guess I'm okay with meeting in person and in community. I'm kind of excited to get back into the office. And I think, you know, we held at Epano, we had a community engagement meeting in person for the first time, like in December, and it was just really refreshing to see people in person again. So I'm also okay with virtual, but yeah, I think I'd be happy, maybe not necessarily in April, for our third quarter meeting, but yeah, I don't know, I'd love to see people in person, so that's where I stay on the issue. Thank you
very much. So to be thoughtful around the present challenge with Annalise and her schedule that we planned for third quarter might work for all parties. Molly, I see your hand.
Yes. I wasn't sure if we covered earlier around the city council presentation on our annual report in April. No. Just wanted to flag that we have, I believe, scheduled a date for that. April 22nd. always seems to be always in Fair Housing Month. And so we could, put to, I don't know, it's just one suggestion. We could look at how to align another oversight committee, but also prep for that council presentation every year. City Council raves about your report. So it's an exciting time, but what we'll have to do is a prep work for that. And then I would echo what you all say. We prior to COVID, every year we would try to go out in community at a night meeting, and it made people really want to know which projects are opening when, and they want to know how to sign up. And we have so many projects now that we can actually point them to. It makes sense that we should do that as you know, that next quarter after April. Let's be out in community.
I'm showing April 22nd as a Saturday. Did I not hear the date correctly? Unless we have to go to council on a Saturday.
Oh, we never know these days.
Maybe that's part of the reforms. I don't know.
You know what? I think our coordinator for city council probably mistyped it. It should be April 20th. I think it's April 20th. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. April 19th.
19th. Okay, great. Thank you.
April 19th.
I think it's April 19th.
Well, we'll send you guys an email.
Yeah.
Confirming. And then we'll start putting together some ideas of presentation, some slides for y'all.
Excellent. All things covered. Thanks again for making today's meeting. We trust that everyone stays safe, takes care of yourself, continue all the great work. And we'll see each other soon. Bye-bye.